seriously popular.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
In today's episode,
have Manchester United derailed Liverpool's season?
Why Gary O'Neill is out of order?
And should Ben White ever be picked for England again? I'm Ian Ladyman.
I'm Chris Sutton.
And it's all kicking off.
Chris, will Liverpool fans wake up this morning and say to themselves, oh, well, it's only a game of football?
No, no. Of course they won't. No, they were thinking about the quadruple. And I think, you know, listening to Jurgen Klopp, and he was an angry Klopp, wasn't he, after the game? Yeah. They know that was one they let go. And I thought Liverpool should have had the game out of sight in the second half. And that will be the sorest thing from Jurgen Klopp and the team's perspective, and the great rivalry which there is, but that was one which got away.
Yeah, Klopp walked out with an interview with Norwegian television after the game, and we'll get to that in a bit. But in my experience, managers always get flustered when they are presented with irrefutable facts that they don't like, and I think the irrefutable fact that Jurgen Klopp didn't like was the scoreline. You're right, Liverpool did toss it away, but let's talk about Manchester United. If you're a football fan, I think you can forgive your team anything they have done so far this season, anything they might do next week, anything they might do for the rest of the season, if they give you that, because that was off the scale if you're a Manchester United fan. You would give anything to experience that in the stadium, in the pub with your mates, at home, watching on the television. You can't buy that. Priceless.
It was a classic FA Cup tie. You know, Manchester United somehow winning it. They had a decent start to the game, but I mean, it was up there. You know, think about great FA Cup ties over the years. I mean, that was right up there. And with what Ten Hag has had to put up with this season, his team have been flat and insipid. But there were moments in the game where they did turn up. And I didn't, as I said, in the second half, I did not see the game or the result panning out as it did. But fair play to Ten Hag. I don't think he's going to last beyond the end of the season. I don't. But that was massive him. He seems like a thoroughly decent bloke. And maybe the lesson which he possibly should learn is maybe he should have gambled more as a manager, because in the end he had no choice. He chucked attackers on, didn't he? Bruno Fernandes, centre half.
I was going to say, I'm not sure Bruno Fernandes at centre half gets him very far going forward. But you mentioned there flat and insipid at times this season. They were flat and insipid at times during that game. They were flat and insipid for an hour. I was watching it. I wasn't there for once. I was watching it on the television and found myself thinking in the second half, Liverpool's domination was such in the second half, I found my mind wandering to who Ten Hag's replacement would be. I'm with you, by the way. Now, I have finally come round your way thinking, I don't think he survives. I don't think he can. But I was just found myself thinking, blimey, he's going to lose this one, 3 or 4-1. Why don't they think big, go after Unai Emery and Postecoglou? And then an hour later, the whole thing has changed. And we can sit here and talk about United's fallibility. We can talk about the Liverpool's mistakes in yesterday's game, and we will. But we cannot take it away from Manchester United. They somehow found a way to use the pace they've got on the counter, the energy they still get from that crowd to pull that game around. And whatever happens to Ten Hag, and you and I think we know now what will happen to Ten Hag, he'll be making the longest walk. It may well be the day after an FA Cup final, you never know.
Maybe the day after an FA Cup win.
But absolutely. But whatever happens, he will always have what happened yesterday in his mind and his memory bank. And Manchester United fans, whenever they think of him in the future, will probably think of yesterday. They probably won't think about losing at home to Bournemouth and getting turned over away at Brentford last season. They'll probably think about it yesterday. And like you say, he is a likeable bloke. He does look like a bloke. He's slowly walking towards his own funeral, but he'll always have that. The thing that I found myself mulling over on the train down this morning was, you and I have said that United are capable of turning teams over on the break, on the counter, and that's what they did. But you look at what they can do. So you say to yourself, why don't they do it more often? But also, imagine what that Manchester United's attacking formation could do if they just had a bit of possession to work with, a midfield to work off. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They've got half a team, and that half a team can still win games.
Yep. Absolutely. I mean, they are a brilliant counter-attacking team, but they aren't a team who dominate games as they should do against weaker opposition. I mean, Ten Hag said there's the best 30 minutes, their start to the game, the best 30 minutes of the season. And do you know what? It's probably right. But then you think, well, what is that 30 minutes up against? What other games can they look at and think, well, that was magnificent? And that tells you the whole story of how difficult it has been for Ten Hag. What do we know? Manchester United have talented players. Yes, they do. But have they performed consistently well as a team? Are they capable of dominating games like Manchester City, like Arsenal, like Liverpool? No. Have they progressed this season? No. So while it was a brilliant spectacle, a brilliant win, it felt like it was a bit of a one-off, but some one-off.
I'm determined kind of not to take away the glory from them by just sitting here and talking about how limited they still are. I really don't want to do that because that was their day. That is still the biggest rivalry in English football, Liverpool and Manchester United. And if anybody wants to doubt it, then they can, but they're wrong. Because it absolutely is. Forget Man United, Man City. Forget Tottenham, Arsenal. Forget Liverpool, Everton. Manchester United, Liverpool is the biggest rivalry in English football. And that one will stick in the throats of Liverpool supporters for weeks. They've got to go back there in 3 weeks, by the way. They've got to go back there in 3 weeks in the league. Does this have a knock-on effect for that?
Well, Manchester United just seem to... over the years, I mean, they beat Liverpool at the start of last season, I think.
Correct.
Everything just blurs into one. They beat them 2-1. Nobody expected that.
Correct.
But they do seem to, because of the rivalry, they do seem to raise the game at times against Liverpool. Having said all that, if you're a Liverpool player and Klopp would have gone into that dressing room at the end of the game and they'd say, how on earth did we not win this game? How on earth did we lose this game? The chances they had, the domination they had. It was like Olays in the second half, the way they were popping it back and forth and Manchester United couldn't get near them. So that, from a Liverpool perspective, the quadruple was on and they blew it.
Yeah, I'm going to say, I mean, people, journalists, supporters will rewrite what happened. They will. In their head, they'll see it as this incredible kind of bravura Manchester United performance when it wasn't. Liverpool were criminally bad in that second half. I don't think they'll get the criticism that they deserve because they were criminally bad. United were at 37% possession at one point. Liverpool had a 5-on-2, didn't get a shot on goal. Other opportunities to make the right pass. In the final third, really throughout the game, Liverpool were absolutely wretched. And I don't know why. I think The fact that, and Klopp hinted at this while storming out of that Scandinavian TV interview, the tiredness maybe. I think the stat was that going into the game, Liverpool had played 18 games.
18 and 12, wasn't
18
it?
18 games this calendar year, opposed to 12 of Manchester United. There could be something in that. But what I will say is that if that game had been similarly poised after half-time, 2-1 to the opposition, and the opposition had been Manchester City, Manchester City would have won that game 4-1.
Bit of a hypothetical,
well,
an
well, it's
easy
a totally
thing.
Hypothetical point, not
an
a bit
easy.
One.
Yeah, I was trying to be nice. Yeah. It's an easy thing to say that.
Well, I mean, do you disagree?
Erling Haaland has missed.
Do you
chances.
Disagree? They'd have put the game
I don't
away.
I think it's a pointless.
Do you?
Argument.
I think it points to Liverpool's fragility on the day, and because.
Oh come on! I'm not going to disagree with that, but look at this Liverpool team over the years, the mentality monsters this season. How many times, I think how many times they've come back from deficits? I think they're leading in terms of Premier League points. You know, they have this belief. It just didn't click. Salah looked off it. Salah yeah. looked, and there, of course, there are reasons for that because, you know, he's coming back from injury. I thought some of the substitutions, Gakpo came on and looked like he didn't have his boots on the right feet. Darwin, we love Darwin, wasn't the start of the game, yeah. of course, but what was the pass he was making for the Rashford when Rashford eventually scored?
That was the best pass he made all game.
I kept looking, thinking, what did he see there? Who was he trying to pass that to? And I still don't know. I don't think he does.
If you give him five chances at home at Old Trafford, he will eventually score one of them. But you're right. It wasn't Nunez's best game at all. What does it mean for Liverpool? Is it a setback,
yeah.
or is it a mortal blow that could impact what happens moving on now? Give me the psychological insight of someone who maybe, if you were on the wrong side of that one.
It's a setback, and that's their mindset, as simple as that. It's a sore one.
A
real sore one. It will rankle. It will sit in the pit of the stomach
right.
because of the opportunity, the way the game panned out. Manchester United started well, then Liverpool were dominant. And you don't mind losing. Well, you do mind losing games. Everybody's a bad loser. But there are... You know, if had Manchester United really dominated and pushed Liverpool back and it been wave after wave of attack and dominated possession territory, then you'd take that. But Liverpool had chance after chance. You made a great point about Liverpool in the final third. They were wasteful all afternoon. They should have buried Manchester United. They didn't. And that will be where the Liverpool players will be thinking, what a chance we have missed.
I agree with you. Just a quick point on replays. Now, there will be no replay, obviously, and from next season onwards, there won't be replays from the third round at all. Yesterday was a good example of how that changes the cup fundamentally. Because even though Liverpool had dominated the kind of an hour of that game and got pegged back right at the end at 2-2, normally, or seasons past, they go back to Anfield with a 2-2 for a replay in the box seat. Thinking, you know what, we could have won that game, but we didn't, but we're still favourites
to go through.
Changes the mentality.
Right, so where are you on replays then?
I like FA Cup replays.
But so do I.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, that changes it, doesn't it?
Let's not even think about making, you know, an argument for no replays. We know there's going to be no replays from next season. I think it's pretty despicable. I really do. I think Matt Barlow wrote an excellent piece back end of last week. About some of the great replays, Manchester United against Arsenal 99, the Giggs goal, Ronnie Radford, remember
yeah,
that?
Of course,
even you
yeah.
were alive
yeah, yeah.
back then. Ricky Villa,
FA Cup final.
But more than that, it's the importance to the smaller clubs. That financial difference between non-league clubs at lower levels staying afloat or not. So I actually think it's really despicable the fact that there aren't replays.
I couldn't put it any better than that. You know, and you know that I'm in step with you on that one. The point I was making was that yesterday was a good example of how it changes the dynamic.
Mm.
That was all. Now, great football matches often give rise to great journalism, great commentary, great writing. There's plenty of it today.
A bit egotistical.
I wasn't there. I haven't got a word in the paper this morning or on the website.
Yeah, you're right.
So in our verdict pull out in the print edition of the Daily Mail today, you can read Oliver Holt, Chris Wheeler, Lewis Steele, all writing on that game and all of that stuff and more. Extra content today, updated pieces looking forward, are all across Mail Online and our other digital platforms. Go check them out. Now, quickly, let's play some five-a-side. So, staying with the theme of drama, last minute goals, etc. I'm going to, such as the one that we saw at Old Trafford yesterday, I'm going to ask you, Chris Face, quickly in descending order, five up to number one, your five favourite last minute goals.
My five favourite last minute goals at number five. I'm going to put myself in here. Is that okay?
That's
fine. With you? For a goal which I scored for Celtic 2003-04 season on the 8th of May, my son Ollie's birthday. We'd beaten Rangers every game that season. Good Rangers team back then. 92 minutes on the clock. Game wasn't the best of games, and I ended up chipping Stefan Kloss from, always gets further out, 35 yards. In the end to win the game. So it was called the green and whitewash season because we'd beaten them every game. Wonderful goal from me.
Let's talk about me.
But at number four, Stan Collymore, the Liverpool Newcastle Kevin Keegan slumped. I think that was 92 minutes on the clock. Such a watchable team, Kevin Keegan's Newcastle were. Ginola, Asprilla, Ferdinand, all-out attack. And Liverpool had great players as well, Robbie Fowler. But Collymore, that was the goal which did for Kevin Keegan and his team that season. Brilliant game. At number three, I played in this game as well for Chelsea, believe it or not. 2-0 up, Chelsea were at home to Arsenal. Bit of a, well, strong rivalry. And Kanu scored a hat-trick, his last goal from a really narrow angle over on the byline. Brilliant finish. Didn't like the result because I was playing for Chelsea at the time. But that was real drama. I think there was like a monsoon. It tipped down at Stamford Bridge. But no, that was memorable for the wrong reasons, but a brilliant hat-trick from Kanu. At number two, the Aguero moment. Two down against QPR. And Aguero, that goal etched in Premier League history. Brilliant finish, brilliant comeback. Great team they were. But at number one, the greatest last-minute goal would be Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. The best team which I think I've ever seen, that Manchester United team. Always had that resolve to go to the end, famous for Fergie time goals. And they got two, didn't they? Sheringham first, but then the Solskjaer winner in Barcelona against Bayern Munich. That would be the greatest ever last minute goal.
That was the first week that I worked for the Daily Mail.
Was it really?
I wasn't there. No, of course I wasn't. I was watching it in a pub in Nottingham. Yeah, my first week working for the Daily Mail. Now, it's a good list. What people might forget, my United fans won't forget, Liverpool's fans won't forget, but in the January of that season, January 99, FA Cup third round, Ole Solskjaer also scored a late goal to beat Liverpool and knock them out of the FA Cup. Had it not been for that goal, there would have been no treble assault, never mind a treble. Liverpool were leading 1-0 with a couple of minutes to go. Dwight York, Ole Solskjaer. The other couple that I would quickly mention, Paul Dickoff, 95th minute of Manchester City's playoff final
good
in Division
shout,
2
yeah.
against Gillingham. It wasn't a winner, it was an equaliser, but it felt like a winner. But also, I think, and you've got to watch this, find this on YouTube because it's off the scale. May 2013, Championship playoff semi-final, second leg, Leicester at Watford. It's 2-2 on aggregate.
Yes.
Go into added time. Leicester get a penalty to win it and go to Wembley. Ante Knockhart takes it. It's saved by Almunia. The follow-up is saved by Almunia. Leicester, Watford then go length of the field at Vicarage Road. Troy Deeney, far post, 97th minute to take Watford to Wembley. That is by a mile the most dramatic last-minute goal I've ever seen. Now,
no, it's not better than mine in the green and whitewash.
So, what is? So, let us know what you think. It's a good topic. There'll be wide-ranging views. Leave us, go to show notes on Spotify or Apple Podcast or any of our social platforms, at Mail Sport, Instagram, TikTok, X. You can see clips of the show there and you can leave your thoughts. Usually leads to a lively debate. Now, there was FA Cup drama on Saturday as well. 3-2 win for Coventry at Molineux. Mark Robbins celebrated that winning goal with a fist bump in the direction of a ball boy, Chris. Now, just tell me a little bit what that was all about.
Gary O'Neill came out after the game. His Wolves team had lost to Coventry. They'd snatched defeat from the jaws of victory, hadn't they, Wolves, to get themselves ahead 2-1. And then there was an incident with Mark Robbins and the ball boy. I think Mark Robbins said after the game the ball boy dropped a ball when he wanted to get on with the game and get his Coventry team back into the game. Coventry end up winning. Mark Robbins then runs down the touchline with the winning goal. Brilliant goal, as it was. Hedgie Wright pops the ball into the far corner, and he's emotional, he's pumped up, and this is probably, I don't know how many years has been at Coventry, 6-7 years, whatever it is, of emotion, and he's steaming down the touchline, and he's annoyed because the ball boy had tried to slow the game down from his perspective. And ball boys are told to do this, by the way, from, you know, by the home team, and it happens everywhere, and it's something which I've never really liked. But then the ball boy got upset, apparently. Young lad, I don't know how old he was, 12 or 13, but you can be a pain in the arse when you're 12 or 13. I certainly was, and my dad used to clip me round the ear. So Mark Robbins pumped up, emotional, celebrated in front of the ball boy. Should he have done it? No. But we talked about all that. But what I would say, I think Gary O'Neill to come out after the game and talk about that and describe Mark Robbins' actions as disgusting, I don't like it. I think he should have let Mark Robbins have his moment. He's worked exceptionally hard to take Coventry to where he has done. I think Gary O'Neill was a bit of a snitch, a bit of a grass. What was the point of him doing that? Just let Mark Robbins have it. You know, have that moment now. FA Cup semi-final against his former club, Manchester United. It spoiled that, and Robbins has to then come out and fend off questions, about this whole incident. He shouldn't be thinking about that. He should be thinking about where he's taken Coventry City. We remember Coventry City back when they were a pretty stable Premier League club.
Yeah,
he's done brilliant well there. They're a club which has fallen off a cliff, and he's got them back, and he has to deal with that crap. I thought that was so poor from Gary O'Neill, and I like Gary O'Neill, but he was a sneak there.
I have to say that I don't. You touched on it briefly about ball boys told to kind of slow the game down when it's the opposition, speed it up when it's going back to the home team. I don't like that. It makes me feel uncomfortable, the kind of weaponising of ball boys, really, as some kind of, you know, kind of home team tactic. I don't like
and
that
then
at all.
But then they're also innocent, aren't they? And,
Before we move on, let's just hear a little clip of what both managers did say after that game.
Disappointed. I've spoken. I waited for Mark downstairs after I'd seen it and spoke to him, because I was really respectful at the end. You know, having lost a massive game, waited for them to finish their celebration, shook everyone's hand, congratulated them on a real good performance and reaching Wembley and what a fantastic achievement it was. And he apologised, but I just. Yeah, to celebrate in a young boy's face like that, I thought was disgusting. The boy's really upset. It shouldn't happen. Of course, it shouldn't happen. But not too much to say on it because, I've lost and it's going to sound bitter. But I thought it was really important for me to speak to Mark about it because they're just kids doing a job.
Drops to Hadji and I'm stood right behind it. And as soon as it left his boot, you knew it was in. The goal, and I have an apology to make because before that happened, ball boy has the ball, young kid, so I'm apologising to him. He's got the ball in his hand, he drops the ball, walks away smiling. It really annoyed me, but he's a kid, you know. At the end of the day, I've reacted, we've scored the goal, and I've gone and celebrated in front of him. I apologise to him. I do not show emotion very often, but I did today, and that's what the FA Cup does to you. But I apologise unreservedly to him.
I'll be honest with you, Chris. I hear what you're saying about O'Neill. Did he have to bring it up? It's a moot point. I actually think, listening to that both managers in the end dealt with it pretty well.
Did Gary O'Neill have to bring that up?
No, he didn't. But he chose to.
He said he didn't have too much to say on it. He said, in just listening to his words, not too much to say on it. He brought it to light and spoiled Mark Robbins' moment. And Mark Robbins deserved that moment. Gary O'Neill's lucky, right? Not lucky, because I think he deserved the opportunity to manage up. Mark Robbins hasn't had that opportunity, and arguably he's done harder yards than Gary O'Neill in management. So he should have let Robbins have that moment, and he didn't. He took it away. And that would have been an awkward evening for Mark Robbins, thinking about something which he shouldn't have been thinking about. And it only came to light, it may have came to light anyway, and you know these things better than me, but had Gary Neil not brought that to the table, we wouldn't be discussing it now. Out of order.
Well, I tell you what is also a little bit unfair to me is that Coventry have now been drawn against Manchester United in the semi-final. We know that semi-finals are played, of the FA Cup are played at Wembley. I'll never get my head around that. Don't like it. Don't care what the financial argument is. You know, if we can't raise enough money to pay for Wembley without having to play as many games as possible there, then it's a poor state of affairs. But that's the way that it is. That's the way it will be. But I think when you get a game like this, I don't know about you, Chris, but I just think if you just imagine that that game, semi-final, was at, say, Villa Park, Coventry against Man United, I don't know if it's just me, but I just think Coventry would have a slightly better chance than when it's at Wembley, a place where all the Manchester United players have played before. It feels like a cup final. I think playing semi-finals at Wembley plays into the hands of the bigger team. Just quickly, am I imagining that or not?
No, I understand both sides of the argument. Coventry City fans might argue they want the day out at Wembley. It's it's a special stadium, to possibly be able to take more fans to Wembley.
And the gateway seats will be higher. They'll earn more out of it.
Yeah, so there is that. But I think I do side with you on this. I don't.
But it won't be an issue. It won't be an issue in the future because Manchester United are about to build their own Wembley, the North. So they can play all the semi-finals at home.
Hold that thought. We'll be back right after this.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Talking of Wembley, there will be England are playing the next Saturday against Brazil and then the Tuesday after against Belgium, start of Gareth Southgate's warm-up for the European Championships. As we know, Ben White, the Arsenal defender, is not in Gareth Southgate's squad. He's let Gareth know that he doesn't want to be considered for selection going forward. Been an awful lot of debate about that. I know what I think about that, but I'm very keen to know what you make of it.
I did a piece with Kieran Gill last week on Ben White, and I'm probably the best person to talk about turning the your country down, turning the opportunity to play because for your country down, because I did it back in 97-98 season. Got my cap against Cameroon. Glenn Hoddle was the manager, and there was 2 months before the next game against Chile. A lot of competition for places, but this was the season I won the Golden Boot. I'd playing quite well. I expected to be in that squad against Chile, not only to be in the squad, I thought I would actually start because I came off the bench for my cap against Cameroon, and Glenn Hoddle put me in the B squad, and I called Glenn Hoddle and basically told him where to shove it, and it's a massive regret. I think I've spoken about this many times before. I was a disgrace. I shouldn't have done it. I shouldn't have spoken to Glenn Hoddle in that manner. I've apologised to Glenn Hoddle subsequently, done a lot of work with Glenn over the years. But the biggest thing is, and I can't compare myself to Ben White. They're slightly different situations. But there is a deep regret from myself because I it's the biggest honour you can get as a player playing for your country, and I think I should have had more caps. Having said all that, Ben White this season has been brilliant for Arsenal. He's been one of their outstanding players. He is supremely versatile. He's just signed a new deal at Arsenal. England have a chance, a genuine chance, of winning the Euros. There aren't, you look at the England squad and you look around, you know, other European teams, and you think, well, France are, you know, up there, got a good chance of winning it, probably favourites, but England have a real opportunity.
So
and Ben White could be part of that, should be part of that, based on his form this season. And in years to come, I'm 100% sure, and he'll probably be as stubborn as I was and say, no, I was right to make that decision for whatever his reasoning is. I'm 100% sure that Ben White, if he sees England win the Euros, that he'll think, blimey, what a waste. Why was I not part of that? He will regret that for the rest of his life. I'm sure of that.
I'll say a couple of things quickly about it. First of all, I don't think Ben White is under any obligation at all to play for England if he doesn't want to.
I'm
absolutely opposed to the view that you can't turn your country down. Yes, you can. We're not talking about conscription. It's not military service. Ben White doesn't have aspirations as an international footballer. Or finds it too difficult when he's away for whatever reasons, then that's absolutely up to him. I don't think we should judge him.
I know, mate.
But I'm just saying, some people would say that you should never turn England down. I'm just not in that camp. That's all I'm saying. I don't think he should be criticised particularly at all, and I think the door should be open for him going forwards.
Okay, Gareth has left that door open, and I think that's really smart management. There's a lot of high profile people have come out and said, no, Gareth should slam that door shut. Why would he cut his nose off to spite his face?
I agree with that, and I tell you one thing that may also be in Ben White's mind. I don't know about this, but if you just look quickly at the schedule that international players will have going forward this summer, Champions League final June the 1st, that could have England players in it, obviously. Champions League final June the 1st. England then play June the 3rd and June the 7th. They then go to Euros, which start, I think, on June the 15th and finish on July the 15th. Arsenal then play their first pre-season game in LA on July the 27th. There's then a Community Shield on August the 11th, which Arsenal might be involved in, and this Premier League season starts on August 17th. So my point is, if you're an England squad player, I know that 99% of them will think, I don't care, England's the pinnacle, I want to be there. But we talk about players' schedule, we talk about players needing rest, and given that Ben...
end of your career.
Given that Ben would have known that he would probably go there as a squad player and may not even get a minute of action because Kyle Walker is such a good fullback for England, he might just think, part of his thinking might be, you know what, I'm better off getting my rest, prioritising his club over his country. And if that's his view, then I can kind of see a little bit of it. Now, let's put this on...
That's not what you grow up thinking.
No, it's not.
It's not. And at the end, I guarantee you, if England win the Euros, he will look back on that and think, blimey. And you're talking about Kyle Walker. Take your point. But it's about opportunity. So, Jeff Hurst, go back to Jeff Hurst. Jimmy Greaves was going to play, wasn't he?
Very good point. Very good point. Now, let's put this onto a Spotify poll. Should Ben White ever be picked for England again? Very simple question, yes or no. Go to the show notes on Spotify and leave your vote, which will open after this show. Last week's vote, the question was very simple. Should Liverpool have had a penalty in the last minute of their game against Manchester City when Jeremy Doku put his studs into McAllister's shirt chest? Into his chest. The result was pretty comprehensive on our vote. 83% of you said yes, Liverpool should have had that penalty. Tell you what, it tells you how quickly time flies in the Premier League and in English football, because that already seems like an awful long time ago. A lot has happened since then. Anyway, while you were there to leave your vote, remember to subscribe. Same if you're a listener on Apple Podcasts. Leave a comment and please hit the subscribe button. It's really important. So there was some drama in East London. West Ham 1, Aston Villa 1. Not particularly related to the result. All about what happened right at the end of the game when Thomas Suchek thought he'd won it for David Moyes' team, only for the longest VAR check in Premier League history to eventually decide that he'd used his arm. The goal didn't stand. Now, our boss, Lee Clayton, is a West Ham season ticket holder. Lee was there yesterday and joins us now. Lee, you are agitated about this, aren't you?
I really am. I have to say to you that you're in the stadium. I'm behind the goal at the other end with my friends. I've got children to one side and an older guy behind me, and people are just questioning what is going on. You've got no idea. 5 minutes, 37 seconds waiting for somebody to make a decision is a long time. It's a ridiculous amount of time. Once again, the people who are the paying customers are ignored in this. Nobody is considering the impact it has on them. There's no communication. In rugby, there is. But you're in a Premier League stadium, state-of-the-art Premier League stadium, giant screens everywhere, and you are the last person to know exactly what happened.
So just to be clear, you were aware that there was a handball being checked because that comes up on the big screen.
It comes up on the screen.
But apart from that, your point is you're just standing there or sitting there in a vacuum of disinformation or no information.
You're standing there like a lemon and you're turning to each other and you are saying, what is going on? Now, I don't have any issue with the decision that was taken by the referee and the VAR. I had to wait until match of the day two last night to actually see what had happened or to have any kind of understanding about what had happened, because you have no clue and no idea when you're in the stadium. And it just, when we debate these things, Ian, I think, you know, the PGMOL come in and they talk about the impact it has on referees and the Premier League talk about the impact it has on the product. I'm talking about if you're in the stadium, if you've paid for your ticket, I think it's outrageous that you're treated in this manner. Why can't you be treated like a grown-up? You know, if you look at the rugby, you know, big day in the Six Nations on Saturday night, contentious decision. There was a try for Ireland, a critical try for Ireland, and the Scottish defensive work was sensational. And you could only see that really with close up on the camera. If you're in the stadium, that's being shared with you. You have an understanding of the decision the referee's taking because you're seeing it at the same time. You're trusted with that information. The Premier League and everybody who's involved in the significance and importance of the Premier League, because we all care about it, has to wake up to this. It is totally unacceptable. And in my opinion, if it takes longer than 3 minutes to make a decision, then stay with the on-field decision.
I think that is a really, really interesting point, because it's not the fact that, you know, you're a West Ham fan, but you accept, having seen it on match day, that it was a handball. I think it was a clear handball. Chris, I think you, having looked at it again, think it was a clear handball. So it's not that. It's the interruption to the flow of the afternoon. It's the interruption to the flow of the experience and to the enjoyment of being a paying customer at a football match. So I think that point you make there about the 3 minute cutoff is a really, really good one, because at the end of the day, they're only supposed to turn over clear and obvious errors. And if it takes you 6 minutes, it can't be that obvious, can it? So Chris, maybe that is a way forward.
The biggest thing in what you said, Lee, was, why can't football just copy rugby for the fan inside the stadium to understand what is going on, what is going through the referee's mind, what the debate is about? They're paying customers.
I guess two of our greatest stadiums, Anfield and Old Trafford, don't have big screens. Right. So therefore, I guess if you're going to make it the same for one rule for one, you have to make it the same for everybody. I imagine that would be one of the reasons that they provide. But I can't, you know, I really am agitated about it today. It's very kind of you guys to let me come on a gate crash the podcast. But that experience yesterday is unacceptable.
I actually think that point you make there is, I know why you make it. I don't think it matters. If Old Trafford and Anfield don't have screens, that's their issue. And it's an issue for them to address with their supporters. I don't think that the rest of the Premier League should hang around waiting for Old Trafford and Anfield to catch up.
Am I right in saying in the FA Cup there is VAR, they have VAR at Premier League grounds, but with grounds out of the Premier League,
that's
then
right.
VAR
so
can't be used, so there's inconsistency
yep.
there, yeah.
Anyway, there we go. So West Ham 1, Aston Villa 1. I think the one thing we do all agree with is that it was a handball. So at least the right decision was arrived at in the end. But Lee, I absolutely take your point that there has to be something done about the experience of the spectators when they are waiting for these decisions.
5 minutes, 37 seconds.
It's too long. It's too long. Now, as we head towards the end of this particular show, Chris, it's been a bad weekend for Tottenham. We've touched on Ange Postecoglou and his sensitivity to being questioned about the 3-0 defeat at Fulham.
What do you mean sensitivity?
One of the things he did say when he was asked about...
I think he was sensitive.
When he was asked about Well, you're never going to criticise Postecoglou.
I just think he's a straight shooter.
So when it was put to him that maybe it had been a bad weekend in Tottenham's quest for fourth place, final Champions League place, he said, fourth is not my goal. I don't want to finish fourth if we haven't grown and developed. It doesn't give you anything for next year. Well, it does, Ange. It gives you a place in the Champions League.
You know what he's
saying. Hang
on. You know what he's saying. Why are you doing this?
It gives you a place in the Champions League. It gives you money. It gives you greater leverage in the transfer market when it comes to attracting players. So it does give you things. And you're talking about growth and development. Getting into the Champions League is part of your growth in your development.
Totally misinterpreting what he's saying. He's not saying it in the manner which you are. You're twisting it.
No, I'm not.
You're twisting my melons.
I'm not twisting.
You are. You're twisting his words. That's not what he's meaning. So he spoke about this a lot when he was north of the border at Celtic, about performance being the key factor and progress being the key factor. And he's not just looking at a league position, at a fourth place finish, as being the barometer for progress. It's as simple as that. Not from his perspective.
Well,
there has to be what he sees as progress for the team to make that next step. It's not just about fourth place or fifth place or whatever is the Champions League spot. That's a different argument for the club as a whole, but it's as he sees it. And if you put everything into the mix, then I'd understand where you're coming from to some extent, but you're not doing that. You're taking a strand of what he actually said and misinterpreting what he said.
All I would say is, good luck having that conversation with Daniel Levy if they miss out on the top four, or even if we do get a fifth Champions League place.
Do you think, honestly, Ange Postecoglou is going to be that bothered about what Daniel Levy thinks?
I don't think
he is, because I think he will simply be thinking about the job which he is doing and how he sees it and how he sees progress. And if it's not aligned with Daniel Levy, so be it. But Ange Postecoglou will fall on his sword doing what he wants to do, not what Daniel Levy wants him to do.
I am not disputing Ange Postecoglou's strength of character or single-mindedness or confidence in what he's doing, all admirable qualities, necessary qualities to be a top Premier League manager. I am disputing his viewpoint that fourth is not about growth and development. It doesn't give you anything for next year. Yes, it does. It gives you money.
He's not saying it like that. We're going to have to agree to disagree. He's not saying it in the way that you... I don't understand how you're so... You're being so blind.
Tell you what, Daniel Levy will be sitting in his office thinking every day Champions League, and because he knows what it's worth. He knows how, you know, there'll be a list of transfer targets for summer. It's easier to get them if they're in the Champions League. It's easier to pay for them. I'm sorry, we will have to disagree on that one. Right, let's do some moments of the weekend, and you can go first.
Thank you. Well, my moment of the weekend, and just in the last week as a whole, my old team, Lincoln City, they've been on fire, like back in the day when I managed them.
we won't go there.
But a certain striker, Joe Taylor, hat-trick at the weekend against Bristol Rovers, 6 goals in the week. Great story. Played with my lad at Wroxham, which I don't know what the tiers are, but this was just a couple of seasons ago. And remember watching him. He was on loan from King's Lynn to Wroxham, playing in King's Lynn reserves, and watching him actually, and I was taken aback with what a natural finisher he was and how quick he was. And there were parts of his game where I thought, well, he's not the most rounded player and he's got a lot to work on, but I'm delighted to see the jump that he has made into league football. He's on loan from Luton, actually played in the playoff final for Luton last season, came on, but he's made great strides. And good luck to him.
It's interesting because people say, oh, there's not enough talent in the pyramid. There certainly won't be any talent in the Premier League if the Premier League clubs don't agree some kind of deal in terms of helping fund those levels of our game. But people say there isn't the talent in the pyramid that there should be. I think there's examples everywhere, especially now that clubs are being constrained a little bit by profit and sustainability regulations, etc. It's not quite as easy to spend the big money. There are talents, and it is great seeing players such as Taylor coming through, proving themselves, working hard, scoring goals. And actually, one of my moments of the weekend is not dissimilar to that. Luke Berry scoring a goal for Luton, their equaliser against Nottingham Forest on Saturday. He's now scored in every tier for Luton, started in the Conference. That was his first Premier League goal. And he said afterwards, it's a dream. When I scored in the Conference, it wasn't quite like this. I just went home, in other words, didn't have to line up and do endless TV interviews. Interesting week for Luton, by the way, and for Forest. Forest are due to find out this week, might even be today, what their Premier League punishment will be for breaching their profit and sustainability rules. If they get a few points, 5-6 points, as Everton have ended up with, then they'll be swapping places with Luton, and it'll all be on for Nuno Espirito Santo and his team to stay up. Although obviously then there'll be appeal, and then we'll have to wait, and the whole tedious saga will go on and on. My other moments of the weekend, Roy
Keane. You can only have one. I've got three.
Roy Keane refusing to give the Manchester United mascot Fred the Red a high five before the game at Old Trafford left him hanging. So that was vaguely amusing. And also at Burnley won a game of football. Burnley beat Brentford at Turf Moor. A couple of things there that stood out for me. One was the fact that the Brentford defender Reguilon was sent off for conceding that for conceding the penalty that led to the first goal. I'm not sure about that rule. I think it's double jeopardy. I don't like it. One punishment's enough for me. If it's a penalty,
that was the correct decision because he shoved him over.
Under law. Oh yeah. It was a penalty under law. He's got to go, but I'm not sure I quite like that rule. But my moment was David Datro Fofana. Missed a goal from a yard.
2 yards.
Two yards. Then did that really clever thing where he waited behind the Brentford goalkeeper to nick the ball when he threw it down to kick, but then fell over when he was would have been easier to pop it in. But kept going.
Then he should have given away a penalty.
And that, which will he did a nice bit of wrestling that one. But then scored a wonderful goal, end to end. That's what, when Vincent Kompany goes to sleep at night, that's what Vincent Kompany thinks about. That's what he dreams about. Stopping a counter-attack deep in your own half with a good tackle. 6 passes, 6 players, end to end. Brilliant goal. Turf Moor on fire. Forget the fact that they're bottom and they're going down. That's what Vincent Kompany dreams of. That's his football.
I don't think when Vincent Kompany goes to bed at night, I think he possibly dreams about other stuff.
I think when Vincent Kompany goes to bed at night, he probably lies there and wonders what on earth Craig Bellamy's getting up to. But anyway, he's assistant manager. He just looks a bit confused then.
I didn't know which way you were going with that.
Fair play to Vincent Kompany, by the way. We've talked on this podcast before about the loyalty he has shown to James Trafford, his talented but rather vulnerable goalkeeper. And he replaced him on Saturday for the first time. And his replacement had a very, very good game. So there we go. Those are my moments of the weekend. There were about 7 there. And that's it. Thanks for being with us, everybody. Thanks for listening. As always, a packed weekend of FA Cup and Premier League football. This is a season that just keeps on giving. I hope you view the podcast in the same way. Remember, wherever you're listening, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, leave a review, leave some comments, hit the subscribe button. Thank you very much. We'll be back on Thursday for our weekend preview show ahead of the internationals, and we'll be back here staring each other from these seats next Monday. I'm Ian Ladiman. The chap to my left with his Ange Postecoglou vest on is Chris Sutton, and this has been It's All Kicking Off.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.